Hello and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-hosts, starting with D's, the distinctively dynamic Doyen of the Airways, Mary Abajay.
Hey, Chris DeSantis. Oh, I nearly choked on my own spit with the word doyen, which I love, by the way.
Yeah, right?
Oh my gosh, thank you. I love it. Well, hello, everybody. I am Mary Abajay, and it would be my honor to introduce you to my co-host, the dependable, the dapper, and the never disagreeable, Mr. Chris DeSantis.
Hey, Mary. Hey, how are you doing? It's been a while.
It's been a while. I know. Well, it's been a while since we recorded, but because of vacations and whatnot. But we did just get to see each other, which was fun.
Yes, that's right. We had an event together out in Phoenix at the Boulders.
Scottsdale, to be exact.
Exactly. Mary talked about managing up, and I talked about generations.
It was fun. It was nice. And so we even got to see a wild pig with the javelina, which, listeners, I pointed it out to Chris. We were walking to dinner through, like, you know, the hotel property. And I'm like, oh, look, a javelina, a wild pig. And Chris DeSantis is like, are they dangerous? And I said, yes, of course. And he literally started to run. Well, almost. He's like, well, let's get away.
Yeah, exactly. I only had to be faster than Mary in this instance.
And then I thought I gave him a heart attack when I reminded him that in Arizona, you should always check your shoes before you put your feet in for scorpions. And I think that scared you a little bit.
Well, it did, because I put all my shoes on a shelf after that when I got back to the room. And I shut my luggage, so I didn't want one of those surprises either. I didn't want to have a James Bond moment where the thing comes.
Goes right for the juggler. Well, Chris, exactly. You know, before we start today's show, and it's going to be a fun show, I think. I was doing a virtual presentation for NAHL, the National Association of Women Leaders, and the woman that was going to present me or introduce me, her name was Heidi Knight, and she's from Beverage and Diamond, and she was so cute. She was like, "Oh my God, Mary, I requested to introduce you. I'm such a big fan of Cubicle Confidential."
Oh, no, that's so nice.
I know, isn't that nice? So I did say, like, we'd give a good shout out to Ms. Heidi Knight at Beverage and Diamond. Thanks for listening, Heidi, and it was really nice to meet you.
Yeah, send in a question, Heidi.
Yeah, maybe she will. But now we can't, like, say it was her. So, and no. We promise you, listeners, none of the questions from lawyers. Oh, I don't think we have any questions from lawyers today anyway. So, but speaking of our show today, Chris DeSantis, would you say that you are a hopeful person, an optimistic person, or are you more of a realist or even more of a pessimistic person?
Oh, I think I'm more optimistic than pessimistic. I think if we were going to say, you know, which way does that pendulum swing, as it were? Yeah, I'd be more optimistic. Realist, I don't see. I think my advice would probably lean towards being realistic, but my hopes aren't.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think that I am a optimistic realist. So I always expect things to work out, but I don't expect things to be fabulous, right? So I always, like, kind of moderate my expectations so that the disappointment isn't so great if things don't work out. But but when the success is successful, then I've moderated enough to be like, well, the other shoe hasn't dropped. So I tend to think optimistically, but realistically. So I think my optimism, at Pollyanna-ish, is tempered by a little bit of realism.
Well, I also think as we age, we change our views to some degree. You know what I'm saying? But either I probably was more optimistic in my 20s than
really?
I probably because I didn't know as much, and so I imagined more.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you were more hopeful in your 20s.
Probably in a disillusioned kind of way.
You are one sad case.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, today we have three questions, and almost all of them are somewhat related to like being hopeful or being hopeless or just being wah, wah, wah. So without further ado, are you ready?
I am certainly ready for this. It's been a while, a little rusty here.
You're a little rusty here? All right. Well, I'm sure it's all going to come back to you like riding a bike. We can hope. All right. Question number one is from No Motion with This Lotion in Memphis. Dear Cubicle Confidential, welcome back. Big fan of the show. What I like is that the two of you are pretty optimistic, but practical at the same time. What did I just say, Chris DeSantis? Almost the exact same thing, right? I'm writing because I have a boss who was wildly optimistic, but not practical. Recently, he set a sales goal for a slow selling line of skincare for each of the store managers at our unnamed cosmetic chain. I'm guessing the cosmetic chain has a name, but he's just not sharing with us. All right.
Exactly.
So this goal is ridiculous. The line doesn't play to our demographic, and the packaging sucks. How do I convince him that he's not even close? Considering the two other store managers are all gung-ho just to show they are team players. Signed, No Motion with This Lotion in Memphis. Wah, wah, wah. So, Chris, I'm assuming from my poorly read question that he is a store manager and he has to create, he has to sell some lotion that he does not think will be successful with his demographic, but his other store managers are all gung-ho. And so he's trying to figure out what to do. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. I see it as well. They want to be seen as already mentioned in this thing here, as a team player. And he's saying, you know, this, I don't think this is going to work. This isn't going to work. But he also sounds like he has a track record with this guy in terms of situations like this in the past.
Yeah, it does sound like that a little bit. Yeah. So why don't you take a crack at this first?
Yeah, what I'm thinking on this one is, you know, I don't know if I would challenge him directly on this, because I think if you challenge him, that will make him defensive right off the bat. And again, to his your point, you will not necessarily be seen as a team player. I think what you want to do is look for other situations where he was right and compare them to this situation. So I meaning my point here is, look, note the differences in the demographics between when he was writing, you know, this one, the packaging, and any else that would sort of distinguish it from a successful line. So in that sense, look, you would say to him, you're usually right. Look, here's the thing, you're right. Here's what's weird for me. I'm seeing this that doesn't match. I'm seeing this that doesn't match. I'm seeing this that doesn't match. And it doesn't seem to go in line with what you normally do. So I thought maybe, and this is where you might give him an alternative. What if we tried something that in one of the stores, we go here as a sort of a control group that's different than the other stores? This way you can find out maybe there's an alternative here that might better fit what he's trying to go after. So once you get him to explain what his thoughts behind this are and compare it to what the other one is, you then say, well, what about this? Let's try this here and then see if that works. Because I think you want to go with him as opposed to opposed to him. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you know, I didn't even think about sort of the ABC method, you know, like trying different things at different stores. I really like that. You know, it can be, I totally feel for this person because unrealistic goal setting is really annoying, right?
Yeah,
but we also don't know. We're going to have to take... we're going to take him at face value that he's just not being wah, wah, wah about this, right?
That's a good point. I went with the optimistic view that he was.
So I'll do that as well, right? I'll do that as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good point though.
So, but, you know, so I'm not sure. So, you know, this also, you know, also wasn't sure whether this was repeated behavior by the boss. Like, was this boss always this positive and optimistic? Could it possibly be like toxic positivity here, which would be really interesting to think about, or if it was just this one case. So I'm going to just do it for just this one case. I agree with you. Since the other store managers are all gung-ho, if you're the one that's like, this can't happen, if you're wah, 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 you're going to be the naysayer and that really doesn't work.
Exactly.
You know, I think the only thing I can add to your idea is, you know, if you want to toss in a dose of realism, you know, try the yes and approach with this person. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can see how that would be great for this company if we could, you know, really accelerate sales with this lotion. And here are some of the challenges or obstacles we're going to to have with this particular product, and then mm-hmm. list them out and, you know, and do your research, get things like, customer feedback from this, show your demographics, like make your case to why this won't really work well, and mm-hmm. what challenges, but make sure you do that with a plan. So despite these challenges, here's what we're going to try to do. So that's yeah. one way. The other thing I could say is, similar to your idea with the other store managers, is why don't you brainstorm with the other store managers about strategies to move this product line?
So that's
that you,
not bad.
You know, like really, like you guys, this is going to be tough, at least in my market. How, what are you guys doing, et cetera, et cetera. So I liked your idea better, actually, come up with three different ideas. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the kind of thing where no motion would behoove him, her, or them to really talk with the other store managers and create something. The other thing is, you could also say to the boss, like, you know, yes, we are going to do our best to move this. Here are some of the challenges I have. Would love it if you have any advice for how we can overcome these challenges. Like, get the manager mm-hmm. sort of involved with creating this collaborating success. And then lastly, I would say, like, double check your impression. I mean, this is, or your judgment around this. This is a classic case of like selling shit, right? So mm-hmm. like, when have you ever sold something that wasn't really the best product or something like that? Like mm-hmm. be more creative about how you can move this lotion. There's always some way to sell something to somebody. What did P.T. Barnum say? Like,
there's a sucker born every minute.
Okay. Maybe that's not the right one. But you know what I mean. Like,
yes, I do.
Be something that you're completely overlooking.
Well, the other thing that you hit on here is that I think one thing he could tell his boss is, quite frankly, is my job is to make you look good.
Yeah.
And if we put all our eggs in one basket here across three stores and this doesn't work, it's a reflection on you. I'm thinking, why don't we sort of, again, to your point, if we have alternatives, we have a hedge.
Yeah.
And that sort of makes the case that I'm on your side. This is why I'm suggesting this.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah. And I'm going to tell no motion, like, you know, it's a skincare lotion. Like, why isn't it working for demographics? Get creative. I think there's probably a way, you know, to sell it some way. I mean, if it's not, we're, of course, people, we're not talking about anything that's unethical or going to like burn your skin off. But if it's just finding a way to sell something, find a way to sell it.
Mother's Lard. Maybe it's the name of the brand.
Well, you know, skincare is a big business, so.
I know. It's crazy business. And what you can charge for some of these things, it's crazy.
Girl, the amount of money I pay for some skincare is just out of control. And I still don't like any of my skincare. I mean, some of it I like, but.
She's got skin. Listeners, you can't see this, but she's got skin like silk.
Oh my God, you're so full of shit. But you know, I come from an Arab heritage, and my aunts all had beautiful skin, and they claim that the secret to their beautiful skin, like I have an 85-year-old aunt that seriously could pass for 65. Her skin is so perfect. Wow. She puts Lubin on her face. And Lubin, everybody who doesn't know what Lubin is, it's like a Syrian yogurt. It's like a kefir kind of a yogurt.
It's something you eat?
Oh, yeah. And apparently it makes a great skincare product. So,
and then how long does she keep it on? Overnight or just during breakfast until she...
I think like 15, 20 minutes, lets the enzymes get in there unless she washes it off.
Huh. That's interesting.
We Arabs do some strange things.
Yeah, exactly right. She's in the punch bowl again.
She's in the punch bowl. There you go. So anyway, all right. So I think we helped no motion, maybe. Funny. Who knows?
I think we did.
Are you ready for the second question, which I
love?
Yes,
please.
All right. Question is from... I gotta get this exactly right. It is from Cassandra Works Here. Hi, Mary and Chris. Have you ever had to work with someone who is always negative? I mean, nothing is ever good, not in their jobs, not in their life, their health, or their family. This woman is all doom and gloom, and she works right next to me. We share a cubicle, and for a while, working remotely, things were great. but now we're back sitting next to each other. I'm very close to quitting because every time she opens her mouth is to say something tragic. I used to feel bad for her, but now I'm at the point where I'd like to tell her just to shut the fuck up. Excuse my French, but that's how frustrated I am. You're my last hope before turning in my resignation. Signed, Cassandra works here.
Oh man, that's horrible. I know people like this. You know people like this? Or I've known people like this.
Do I know people like this?
I live
with someone like this. I'm sorry, honey. My husband, Chris, I call him Cassandra all the time. He starts going off on like the sky is falling. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Cassandra. Could you rephrase that? Oh, it's one of the biggest things we fight about because I'm always like, things are going to work out. And he's like, things are going to fall apart. Like, yeah.
Oh, wow. He's fanged to your Phyllis Diller.
He is fanged my Phyllis Diller. No, but I will say this, and he's going to be so mad at me, but he is prepared for doomsday. Like we have, like, should the society ever collapse, uh-huh, we're going to be okay.
Well, now that all the neighborhood knows.
we have a generator. We have a generator, and we lose power occasionally when there's thunderstorms. And I'm like, oh, let's just rev up the generator. And he's like, oh no, we can't. And I'm like, why? That's what it's there for. He's like, no, because if we start our generator, all of our neighbors will know, and they'll be flocking over here to charge up their cell phones. So I'm just like, all right. So why do we have it? And he said, for emergencies. I'm like, what is this? He's like, Mary, the power will be on in 2 hours. This is not an emergency. I mean, he's talking collapse, not just,
Okay.
Anyway.
No, I think it's prudent to be thinking, hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
There you go. No, so that's my Cassandra life. But anyway, back to the Cassandra of the question writer.
Yeah.
What would you?
By the way, viewers, let me just be clear here. I know Chris. He is not this person that we're describing.
he's not. But you know what? 29 years of marriage. I got to find something to pick on.
Oh, no, it's great. But this person is just a doom and gloom.
Yeah.
I have a friend whose mother was like this, and she just was difficult.
Oh.
Difficult. And so I think this is difficult for this woman here, Cassandra's, workmate.
I mean,
Go ahead. You were saying something. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, it would drive me absolutely insane, bat shit crazy to have to work next to someone like this.
Yeah. And I this whole description of her, she just sounds sad.
Yeah.
Not the person and not the writer, but rather the person that is giving all this doom and gloom.
Yeah. So I appreciate from the writer, like, at what point does your empathy just wear out?
Exactly. No, it's exactly. And the problem I see with this person, and at least in my experience, and again, it's only anecdotal, I don't see this person changing. Mm-mm. I think they kind of feed off of this and feed off of the reactions of others to them. You see?
I think so.
I think it makes them visible in some way. Mm. Like, look at how awful this is. You should pay attention to me.
Which just makes it sadder because they're crying for attention, just makes them more pathetic and drives people away.
It's exactly right. But I do think it is in fact a sort of a twisted attention getter.
Yeah.
In that sense, and I, by the way, I would not tell them to shut the fuck up. I just don't think that's the way to go with this because I think that wouldn't work at all. That would add to her litany of complaints about no one listens to me. She doesn't listen to me. And then she's going to get HR involved about the tragedy of the person who's sitting next to her who is evil. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She'll become part of the drama. I thought something interesting I'd seen some time back and on how you deal with a narcissist.
Hmm.
Have you ever read about this, about engaging in gray rocking? Have you heard of that?
Keep going.
Gray rocking is a strategy to deal with narcissists in particular, but I think it could apply here. And so what you're doing, if somebody feels the need to get attention, to feel important, and what that really does involve is people responding to them or recognizing them.
Right.
So a gray rock is to pretend you're just a gray rock. And you just don't say anything. You feel you ignore it. You're bland about the whole thing. So at best you go but you don't engage ever.
It's a Jedi mind trick you do to yourself, where you just sort of like
Exactly. Like, and then just walk away and just walk away. So some so when she goes off on one of her tangents, you go off for coffee. And so and I think that my theory here is that she'll eventually find a new target, because there's no, it's like talking to yourself. Yeah. You get tired of talking to yourself. So until and so as long as she does not feed the beast, she won't have a problem, is my theory.
Oh, that's so interesting. I think my husband Gray rocks me, because I'll be saying something and he'll simply walk away.
Yeah, there you go. He's Gray rocking.
Oh,
he's
my God. Rocking. We're going to, as soon as we get off of this podcast, my husband and I are having a conversation about this Gray rock business.
Of course. Well, then I would lock the door with him in the room.
Oh, my God. Too funny. So, all right. So with this, you know, so I love the gray rocking, and I think that's really, I think that's a great option. I'm going to give a couple more. I'm not sure they're any better than gray rocking, but I'm going to assume that, our listener has already shown prerequisite empathy. Like they've already actually done that, right? I'm assuming that.
Well, I think she said that, right?
Yeah, she did. I felt sad.
I used to feel bad.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, one thing you could do is you could name it to tame it. And that might be saying like, listen, I really value our workplace relationship. And I got to tell you, like, your negativity is bringing me down, man. I mean, name it. Like, that's not going to be an easy conversation.
No, I think it's a good, I think it's good to try that.
But good to try. It's, you know, like that. I say that to my husband all the time. Man, your negativity is bringing me down, man.
Right.
But like, be honest about how you're feeling. Like, I really want to be there for you. And it's hard for me to be, to absorb like your pain all the time. Like, you know, go deep there. So that's number one. You could also, number two, acknowledge her complaints and then ask her what she intends to do about it, right? So it's the old inside every complaint is a request, find it and make it. So when she is going on and on about whatever, you could be like, yeah, you know, you told me that. What is it that you want to do about it? Or how are you going to fix that? What are your plans to change it? So you could kind of force her into that. You could just start, if you can't gray rock her, just like walk away, as you said, like just limit your exposure. Wear headphones at work if you're sharing a cubicle.
Oh, yeah, that's a good strategy.
Just say to her, or just like when she starts going on, just interrupt and be like, you know what? Oh, gosh, I just remembered this project's due at 5 o'clock. I'll have to hear that story later. And, you know, these
I
are
just
all
remembered,
avoidance.
I don't want to hear you. I just remembered.
I'm sorry, but I am unable to hear you right now. But you know what? She could also go to her manager and talk about getting a different office space, a different physical seat location.
No, there's that.
I mean, you could say, listen, you know, Cassandra's fantastic worker, and I just got to tell you, she just is so negative. It's bringing me down. I don't want her to get in any trouble, but is there any way I could have a different place to sit?
Well, my theory would be, if this is how she is every day, and she was that way before the pandemic, she's that way with everyone.
Everybody knows.
So
what's
everyone
going on.
Knows.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So I think the request wouldn't be seen as something out of, you know, out of the ordinary. It would be sort of like, oh, you too?
Exactly. Or the manager might be, you know what? I'll give you $100 extra a week if you sit next to her, because nobody else can stand the Cassandra. And so any of our listeners out there who, oh, by the way, any of our listeners out there who are Cassandras, you need to like stop it. Like, do not just shed negativity. Emotions are contagious, people, in the workplace. I mean, it's okay to occasionally have like a challenge or a problem, but you can't be spreading like doom and gloom everywhere you go. You're like Eeyore.
No. Well, again, this goes back to, I think we talked about authenticity before. This is one of those, you know, well, this is who I am. This is who I am. Well, if this is who you are, you're and so the authenticity part of you should be the pro-social part of you, because you are in a space with other people. And so you should be the better version of yourself. That's what this person is lacking. They're the bad version of them. Everyone has a bad day.
Yeah.
It's sharing the entire bad life on a daily basis is the problem.
Yeah. And if you're authentically this way, then you need to authentically change your ways, because this is not serving you at all in life or at work.
No.
I call these people in the workplace, I call them career victims, right? Those people that complain about everything and everybody, but they don't do anything to make their work lives better. That is not a good look.
No, it's not a good look. And it brings everybody down. Which, again, going back to your point earlier, the manager might need to know this at some point. Because
yeah.
I got to believe this affects everyone. You know what's going to happen eventually? Everyone's going to be in one cubicle.
And they're all going to be crowding to one cubicle. This one will be on their own. Well, the other thing you'd want to think about is if she, depending on what kind of a job, I don't think they said where they work, but like people who are negative like that, I wonder if she's negative with the clients or customers.
Yeah, I hope she's not client facing.
Yeah.
That would be just.
Yikes.
Unless she's in customer service and the clients complain and then she says, oh, you think that's bad? Well, you should have. She out-complains them.
Out-complains them. Well, that's, you know, which is a tactic, right?
That's an interesting tactic. Actually, it might be quite effective. They won't call back.
They certainly won't. All right. Well, hopefully right. Cassandra Works Here has, we gave Cassandra Works Here like 5 ideas, so.
Oh, this is brilliant. These are all brilliant
ideas. We were brilliant. No, you were brilliant.
No, you were brilliant.
All right. Our third question is from Half as Good or Twice as Bad in Dallas? Hi, all. I have a meeting planning team that I manage, and I've got 2 people on my team that see the world very differently. One is always upbeat and hopeful, and the other tends to find fault in all things. The problem is, he's my best performer. His meetings are run well, and he's always within budget. The clients are always satisfied with the work, but find him a bit sour. Whereas the clients love my upbeat employee, but her work is really subpar. She's forever making small mistakes that the other team members end up having to fix. Speaking of fixing, can these 2 be fixed? And if so, how? Or should I part company with one of them to set an example to the other? Half as good or twice as bad in Dallas? Well, I think that last idea is twice as bad.
Yeah, that's not the, yeah, exactly. He's gonna have one
meeny,
employee
miny,
down.
Mo.
Right. Exactly.
One of you have got to go.
Exactly. So he has half the staff with half the production because half of what they're doing isn't that good. So that's not the answer. That's funny.
All right. What advice did you give? Well, Half as Good.
I thought this was pretty interesting because they each are doing something great. And they're each of them have needs in terms of what they need to improve. I thought, as I thought about this, is I think what I'd like to see him do, the boss, I'd like to see the boss do is create a list, basically, of all the customer-facing metrics that are important and a list of all of the, I will call project management sort of metrics that are important.
Yep.
Relative to what the customer wants or the customer wants. And then I would have them rated by their clients. I'd have them rated and then get a group of that, you know, get that rating accumulated. And then I would show them, I'd say, okay, here's the 2 lists. It's clear that you're really standing here. You're great. It's clear you're great over here. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to offer you an incentive. If you can get her list up in terms of improving her process skills, I will give you a bonus. In turn, if you can get his scores up in terms of his customer facing, I will give you a bonus. But I will give neither of you a bonus if neither list goes up.
I love that. That's a great idea. I love, love, love that. I had thought of something similar, but way less cool. I was just like, have them co-mentor each other. But I really like the fact that you're going to make the other success. Contingent on yeah. I love that.
Each other.
Of each other. I love that. The only other thing I had was, you know, of course, work with each of them, their shortcomings, which, you know, you already did very well. But I thought, you know, maybe partner them up. So maybe.
Well, I thought that would be really good too. I thought if they were involved in, although the only problem I had with partnering them up is that they won't develop other skills. Yeah. They will actually be allowed to spend more time with the skills they have, which I think has some veracity. Well, meaning, look, if I get to do the things that I really want to do, customer facing, all of those things, I'm going to be a happy camper. If I get to do all the planning that I really want to do, I'm going to be a happier camper.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that idea too.
Because they're really two different sides of the same coin, right? Together, they make a perfect meeting planner.
Perfect.
But if I was going to partner them up, you know, I'd want to make sure that means they can do as many projects as a duo.
Yes.
And to your point, that they don't mind giving up the other. Because what we don't know if the detail person even enjoys the customer facing. And we don't know if the upbeat person enjoys the detail. So I think it could be a win-win for both of them. But I do like the idea, if you're going to improve them, I like the idea that you had about making the success contingent on the success of the other.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing too is we have to have a baseline, because rather than say, oh, I want you to be as good as her in this, well, what's good? What's
that look? You definitely need metrics. You need clear-cut things that they need to improve on. Well, exactly. Chris, I don't know about you, but I think that we have given hope to three listeners today.
I'm in agreement.
And sadly, I think our listeners are probably giving up hope that we're ever going to end this week's episode. So without further ado, we'd like to thank you all for listening today. Thank you, Jack Ettinger, our overworked, underpaid, but really hopeful and optimistic producer, Mr. Jack Ettinger. If you have a workplace question or a cubicle dilemma, give us a shout. No question is too easy. No question is too hopeless. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com or tweet us at @cubicleconfide1 or find us on LinkedIn. Chris DeSantis, Mary Abajay, and Cubicle Confidential people, we're everywhere. So until we see you next week, work hard, be kind, keep the hope, baby. And if you can't,
call us.
See you next time.